Hello, humans. This is Emily Smith. It's The Vine Down. You may have to be watching us on your phone today because LinkedIn decided to pull us offline. I think it's potentially true that they are just so worried that Jeff and I will be such disruptors that we are not allowed to be live on computers. So if you're watching us on your phones, hello. Thank you for coming. Jeff, welcome to The Vine Down.
Well, you know, it might not have been LinkedIn. It might have actually been Amazon's cloud that was worried about the traffic we were going to generate
and had
to preemptively, you know, limit the bandwidth here.
That is true. We potentially are keeping getting, I don't know, maybe it's the government, whoever's in charge of FAFSA is also keeping a lid on us. It's possible. Well, I'm very thrilled to welcome Jeff Baird on the show. Jeff is the founder of EnrollML. Jeff is an operator at heart. And according to the men's lacrosse coach at High Point University, Jeff addressed the team last weekend. Jeff is also one bad mother bleeper. And I will say a lot of words on the show, but I will try not to say the F word. So welcome, Jeff, who is one bad mother bleeper, to the show.
Well, thank you. I've been called a lot of things worse than that. That's for sure.
Well, audience, I'm thrilled to welcome you. We are here to talk a lot about business process, and I want to unpack what business process actually means, what we mean for that for enrollment, and sort of give an answer on like, why now? Why now? Why would you blow up your business process now? And I want to talk through all those things with Jeff. I will mention that Jeff and I came up with this show, as all good ideas happen out of doors. Jeff and I hatched the plan for this show sitting on a ski lift together at Steamboat a couple of months ago. Jeff also is a Coloradoan. Yeah, there's another syllable there. And Jeff, thank you for coming up to ski with me in my hometown and for hatching the idea for this show. I want to talk a little bit about sort of what business process is, because it's a word that if you don't know what it is, I want to make sure we define it. If you're earlier in your career, it's definitely a word you probably hear a lot and nobody has maybe defined it for you. So Jeff, when you think about business process for enrollment, define the term. What is business process?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I have a somewhat unusual career in that I've worked in, I think, either seven or eight completely different industries. And, you know, that's obviously, you know, not sort of the normal path. The normal path is, you know, you get in and you kind of build up your knowledge base, you build up your experience, your jobs, you move up. And that's obviously has not been my path. And the reason why I've been able to sort of move across industries is because the thing that I always focused on was business process and the processes of running the business. And what's really interesting is, you know, there are, you know, those can be shockingly common across really, really disparate businesses. I have been in consumer goods. I've been in consumer electronics. I've been in higher education. And so, you know, when I would come into new businesses, that was the lens through which I entered, which is the processes. And very simply, it's how does it work? How do things work? Right, to go from A to B to C to D. We're all trying to accomplish something, educate a student, enroll a student, whatever it may be. How does it work? Why are things done the way they are? Mm-hmm. And then really inside of the why, how do things work? Why are they done the way they are? And then the third question is, which of these things are variables and which are constants? And that's really sort of the framework for what is a business process. It's literally how do things work every day? You know, if you are acquiring, you know, if you have a lead or an inquiry and that's got to, you want to try and move that into an application and from an application into a deposit and from a deposit into sitting in class and then ultimately sitting in class, graduating, right? How do all of these pieces work and what's happening in between those stages? That's business process it's really the exploration of how things work and why they're done the way they are.
Yeah. In other words, it's like the stuff you do every day in your jobs. It's the set of activities performed by you in order to achieve a business goal. And we don't like to talk about institutions as business, right? Because we're talking about like the greater good of getting students to go to college and to enroll students to go to college. And it's this very like emotional decision, but it's also like the things that we do in service of the financial imperatives of the college, which is to enroll students. So business process, I think, yeah, I think that's the right way to hang on to it. It's like the stuff you do. In the show, we talk a lot about sort of like behaviors driven out of data, behaviors driven out of emotions, things like that. And the business process is those set of behaviors, those set of activities that you do each day. And Jeff, you are really like a student of business process because you've been spending all of this, you've spent all of this time in your career sort of watching this as like a management consultant. And one of the things that you have gone back to do time and time again is to be willing to look at business process, evaluate it with a very critical lens, which feels like a very bold move, and potentially break it and rewire it. And I'm curious, like, that's a very high stakes move, right? Like, we have to be in a pretty dire situation to evaluate what we're doing. And we also have to be in a really sort of dire and high stakes situation to be willing to rebuild business process, because it's not fun. I mean, I don't think anyone has fun rebuilding business process. So give me the rundown on like, why now? Why should we be looking at this now?
Well, I will say there are a few of us out there that it's fun. It doesn't mean it's easy.
Sick.
It's not always elegant. Right. But you know, there's a couple things that kind of jump out to mind as you kind of pose that question. And the first is, you know, I mean, I think many, if not most people, you know, inherently understand the concept of business process and probably think about, and most certainly think about their business processes or the processes of what they're doing every single day. Mm-hmm. Because in many ways that's what drives the job. One of the, you know, really kind of the difference between, you know, sort of watching and observing versus being able to fundamentally change if you need to. And I'll get to that in a second as to, you know, when you've got to dig this deep, but it's very easy to stop at the surface level processes. And let's just think about, for example, in enrollment, the stages, right? There are events,
stages.
Right? The stages of the funnel, the stages of the admissions process. There's a thing that needs to be submitted. There's a process, right? We need to get these things from the students at these times to sort of move them forward. And that is business process. Mm-hmm. But when you're getting into, am I going to change processes? You have to get down much deeper into the white space that's in between those. And this is sort of the difference, I'd say, between, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, the professionals, right, who really dig into to transform processes. It's getting down low enough and getting down to, you know, what happens in an hour of time during the day, right? What decisions are being made in what order? And that's difficult. That's scary. It can get ugly down in that mm-hmm. level of detail. But, you know, you ask the question of sort of when. And, you know, even though, you know, the bulk of my career, 30 some odd years, across all the industries I've been in, have been focused, you know, on coming in and redesigning and rebuilding processes. The fact of the matter is that, you know, there's also a risk to breaking something that's not broken.
Yes.
And so, you know, the way I sort of think about this is really, you know, starting from the top down. I mean, if things are working, there may not be a need to get down into, you know, low level processes. But if things are not working, and in particular, whatever your KPIs are, whatever your outcome, right? It could be in the business world, it's a financial metric, right? In enrollment, it might be a student or a set of credit hours or a net tuition, or whatever the metrics are. If they're not moving in the way you need them to, you have to systematically move down from the big things down as deep, you know, as deep as you can possibly get. And so what does that mean? What that means for enrollment, as an example, and I've you know, worked on this with multiple institutions, you know, prior to doing what I'm doing now. And that is, you know, as an example, if you're trying to change an enrollment number or a yield number, and your marketing investment is a constant, not a variable, i.e. there's no more marketing dollars, right? You've made a decision, or there are decisions have been made that's it. And maybe there's no more people. You can't bring in any more counselors. So you can't move that lever. And it may be also that there's no more scholarships. There's no more discount rate, right? If those three things that are oftentimes variables, right? If those are variables and they're working, there may not be need to go down, you know, and start getting into really low level processes. But if those variables become constants, then the question is, you know, how can I move the needle? And that's what, you know, is the trigger point to go down and start asking the question, how does this really work? What's really happening? And in lieu of any other big ideas that we've got, how do we go figure out how to make these processes a little bit better, a little more efficient, a little more effective?
Okay. So to say that back to you, you don't want to blow stuff up just for the sake of blowing things up.
No.
The indicator is when you are not meeting your goals. And I think for enrollment, the two key goals that I would see that we consistently don't meet are enrollment goals or funnel efficiency goals. And by that, I mean, like, you're making your class, but there's some cost or upstream, like up funnel friction on, like, your conversion rates aren't as good, or like you had to hire a staff of 200 people in order to do it. Like, that there's some efficiency friction that you have to solve for. And I think that many of us in enrollment are in this place of like, yeah, we're consistently not meeting our goals. So I like what you're saying around, like, don't blow things up just to be like kind of wild and naughty, but to be willing to do so when you're not meeting your goals. And willing to do so, the second part of what you said was like, be willing to do so when you are hemmed in by things where like the walls keep getting, I think of like in Star Wars when like Luke is in the trash compactor.
It really is.
Right. I mean, when like things are happening that you're like, okay, like no more money, no more people, no more aid dollars. And to be willing to do it at that point where you're getting like hemmed in by pushing, by the things pushing on, like, you're no longer able to be proactive. You're just in a constant state of reactivity.
Yeah. So I worked with an institution that was in that scenario. There was no more marketing budget. And by the way, I mean, tremendous work with the marketing budget, but there just wasn't more. Mm-hmm. And there was no more budget for personnel, for more counselors. And there was also no more budget for scholarships. And so really in enrollment, that actually, those three things, when that happens, right now, you're really left with one area, which is yield. And so to just kind of walk through, like, sort of, you know, how this starts to happen. And it really is the trash compactor in Star Wars, right? Because those things are now not movable. Now, there's a whole nother sort of, you know, set of exercises that I would, you know, I think are really, really valuable, even if some of those are movable, to go through a scenario as if they're not, right? Mm-hmm. To sort of see where can we go if these things that are variables become constants. But in the case where they actually are constants, and you know, this was a real example of, you know, in the old days, right? If I had more marketing dollars, X number of marketing dollars could generate X number of leads and or students, right? We could do that basic math. Or if I can get one more counselor, for every counselor, I can generate X number of more students. Now, again, if those are all constants, it came down to yield. And what we started digging into was how do we move yield? And one of the things that came back, a statement that came back was, you know, well, we're doing everything we can, right? And this is the key phrase. And it's the key phrase because that's the point where you either can say stop and, okay, I accept you're doing everything we can. Or the next question is, how does this really work? Let's talk about if we're doing it, let's make sure we're defining it the same way. And now you start driving down into, you know, low level processes. How does this work on a daily basis? And from there, you start getting into why. But that moment, right, there's always that moment where it feels like something is a constant, right? These processes, once we get our scholarship allocation, you know, once we've got our aid worked through, once we've got our leads, once we've got our people, the rest is a constant. And that's the critical moment, is flipping that to a variable. And, you know, let's actually look at these.
Well, you're like, there's a second half of that sentence, which I think is left off. Like, we're doing everything we can. There's the second half, which is we're doing everything we can given the state of the world as we understand it. Like, that could be true, right? Like,
and
like, if the constraints are, you know, the money, and yet, like, if you sort of relieve yourself of that real world thinking, you relieve yourself of like, this has to be true given this context. And it really came down to, like, with the news of another well-known institution in the Southeast closing this week, I think about like how financial aid, sort of the issues around financial aid, have stacked up over time and over the years. And like, what happened, what would happen if you said to your president, like, look, we either find more money for scholarships or we close. Like, that gives you a different look at the world. We address upstream problems on yield, or we continue not meeting our goals. So I think that second half of the sentence is really important, like, given what we know at this time.
And well, I want to add on to that, though. Yes. Yeah. Yes. But I'm going to add on to something, which is that question of why is it done this way? In some cases, it may be that we have mechanical barriers, right? That the FAFSA has not been released.
Yes.
But in many cases, the answers to why is this being done this way, when you really dig into it, ends up coming back to some variation of, because that's how we've done it, right? And that is what opens up the opportunity to say, maybe there's opportunity to change. And by the way, it doesn't mean it was wrong. The decisions that were made to build a process a year ago could have been completely correct, but the environment changes, and subsequently, you've got to rethink the process. And it really, I mean, you know, having done this, and let me just give an example of this, Emily, make it real for enrollment management. All right. So we've done studies here on, and I think we may be one of the first people to have thought about doing this, let alone done it, which is, did a work time study on an admissions counselor's day? And over the course of a day, how does that translate to the time they spend over the course of a year? And, you know, to do that, we had to deconstruct literally, you know, from the time they come in the morning to the process they go through before every phone call, mm-hmm. and the process they go through after every phone call. And, you know, the net of this was, I think we studied and surveyed and interviewed 22 institutions. And we identified something like, I don't remember the exact number, let's say 56 specific processes. And none of the processes were actually interfacing with a student. Okay. They were all the business process of enrollment management. Mm-hmm. And the average amount of time per year per counselor spent on these items was 670 hours per year per person. We found one institution where the processes in between communicating with students consumed 1,000 hours a year per person, half of their time. So, you know, just look at that for a moment and think about, you know, if my counselors are facing away from the students for anywhere from a half to even 8, 12, 15, 18% of the time, now you're talking about the potential to make a set of processes more efficient. And now those processes have the chance to become a variable, not a constant. And maybe we can make them better, and maybe we can get some, you know, we can get more effective enrollment out of that part mm-hmm. of the engine with these other things constants. So it really is, you know, there is real opportunity when you are open to asking the question, how does this work really? Why is it work this way? And are all of the elements of this process truly constant, or are some of these variables that we can change?
Yeah. And I like your point about like bad business process or business process that doesn't help you account, like reach your goals. Nothing nefarious happens. It's really more around, like, I'll bring in armchair psychology, as I often do, that like business process is created because of, like, for it's reasonable and adaptive. That happened for a reason. It's adaptive to a current state. And you're saying sort of like the willingness to need to be able to change it and to be able to look at things like the way staff spends time. And I want to dig into this yield thing because it's yield season, And this is a lot of like, if we can get our bodies out from under this FAFSA heap, darn, we'll be focused back on yield and the things that we're supposed to be focused on in this time of year. But I want to talk to a little bit, keep talking a little bit about yield because it's that season. I want to talk a little bit about the ways in which we can become more proactive about a thing that up until now has felt like a thing that just sort of happens to us and that we are forced to react to. So playing that all the way out on the yield mechanism, what are the things you can do? And like, honestly, sadly, the answer is going to be like, look up funnel and address it sooner. But like, how can we make sure that we aren't here a year from now on yield, where yield feels like this thing we just are forced to react to? How would you get teams thinking?
Yeah. So here's, you know, this is, I've thought a lot about this because, you know, yield is obviously very specific in higher education, but the concept of yield is universal across, you know, any type of business. And so I've spent a lot of time thinking about this over the years and in particular over the last decade in higher ed. And to me, again, if you have big levers that can impact yield, which generally are big top of the funnel things, great. Like impact, do it, right? Squeeze all of the opportunity and benefit out. But when you can't, and particularly, you know, in situations where, you know, yield has been somewhat stagnant, if not dropping, you know, over the last several years, you've got to get lower. And to me, the key then is precision. And that is, you know, the processes, the way that we enroll students and communicate with students and help them understand that the value, the unique differentiating value of our institution, we're going to get some set of students, which we've gotten every year. But say that's the 15% yield. Mm-hmm. We also know now that we've got this, you know, just this data overwhelm of Common App and in some cases Direct Admit, you know, thousands of applications and a you know, huge number of prospective students where they're not really serious about your institution, right? You're not at the top of their list. That's not where yield's going to be impacted. Yield is going to be impacted when you can get to those students that are 50-50, right? You're one of two or one of three, and they're at their dining room table with their family, their stakeholders, whomever it is, and they're debating you, right? And that's where yield is incrementally won and lost. If there were magic solutions for yield, we'd all be doing them. I mean, we'd already know them and be doing
them. Absolutely.
And so you know, when you hit a plateau on yield, it's hard. It's really, really hard. And the key thing is precision and focus and recognizing that you've got to identify, and you can do this, you know, through different data mechanisms. You can do it, you know, now with AI and machine learning, but you've got to be able to identify and focus in. And yield, at least in my experience, is not changed materially with a peanut butter approach. Trying to you know, target a large number of students with the hope that a few of them yield. Again, I think if that strategy worked consistently, we wouldn't all be in this problem because
like a broadly accessible
spreading it across
people. Okay, got it.
Yeah, spreading across a large group of the funnel to sort of try and find the few that'll come out. The key to changing and the best chance, there's no guarantees, obviously, but the best chance you've got is to get in, because those last little points of yield, if they were easy, you'd already have them. They're hard.
They're hard and they're specific. That's the point you're making. And like they're hard to know and specific to do.
You and I were both in Raleigh this past week at the SACAC conference. And I was discussing with someone at that conference the concept of generative AI and where this is going to fit. And, you know, the idea of auto-generating emails. And, you know, part of what I was talking about with them, and my contention is, of course, that's going to be great and wonderful. And that's going to help support students that are already bought in. And it might possibly help be an efficient way to trigger an activity or an action in a student who's not yet bought in. But the way that consumers make decisions of this magnitude, it's not going to be the automated email that gets, you know, that gets you, gets them to select you when it's, you know, you and two others and it's a tight race. And really that's, you know, what, you know, squeezing another point of yield requires.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think about yield in terms of like a sort of a pyramid of maturity. I'm inventing this as I say it. But I think about on the sort of on the fundamental level, like the students that you should spend time with throughout the funnel, not just for yield, like they have to be admissible. And we now all like that's table stakes. Like we know who's admissible and who's not. We have tons of data. We've known for years, this is true for selective schools and non-selective schools. Like that's easy. You can cross that off. The second two tiers here, though, are really important, and this is harder to know, which is to gauge affinity. And by that, I mean, like, are these the right students? Are they, do they feel affinity to you? Do you feel affinity to them? How do we measure that? How do we know that? And then this third piece is the piece that you're unpacking as far as like the thing all the way up the maturity curve is like, are they at a place that is influenceable to them? And are they at a place in their journey where like it's worth your time to spend with them? They could be admissible, they could be high affinity, and they could have made their decision to go somewhere else. And in that case, you've got to know all of those things and know to not spend your time there. Similarly, they could be admissible, they could be high affinity, and they could be in a place where they are influenceable by you. And not only do you have to know all of those things, they're admissible, high affinity, they are in the journey where they are influenceable, then you have to know what to do in order to enroll them. And you're saying like, that is such fine point math that like, you can't just be broad approach on the email. It has to be, it will likely be the specific thing that moves the needle once you know all of those factors.
Well, what you just defined was a set of processes.
How business process.
That? That's Woo! Right. How do you get to that? All those things, right? You agree completely. And you literally just described it, which is, you know, that's the documentation, right? That's documenting a set of processes. How do we get to them? And part of the answer might be, we don't exactly know how to circle in here, but let's identify these processes. Mm-hmm. And now let's go try and solve this specific thing. And that's exactly it, is aligning all the processes, the reality of enrollment management. And I think, you know, I've been in higher ed for 10 years. I'm still an outsider by many definitions.
Oh, it took me to get to like year 17 before I was like accepted.
But you know, I've used a phrase before and I'm going to use it again, which is subjectivity is where yield goes to die. And what I mean by that is, and this again, this came from us, you know, digging into the details of how do we spend our days. Inside of enrollment management in higher ed, by and large, there is still a massive amount of subjectivity. And that subjectivity makes it difficult to hone in and be consistent on finding the folks that are in those states that you identified. And in a lot of ways, when you talk about making processes more efficient across industries, it's reducing subjectivity and trying to systematically replace it with objectivity. And you can't do it all at once, and there's no big magic solution, but it's where are we asking our counselors truly to sort of make up their own answer? And if we can identify where those are, we may be able to start to systematically replace them. And again, there's no big giant answer. It's fixing lots of little cracks, but when they get fixed is when you'll see a greater level of precision and focus. And that precision and focus on those students at the time when they're influenceable, that's 2 points of yield. And look, a 15% yield means 85 of your admits said no. If you can find three more of those 85 and swing them, you've grown enrollment by 20%. And if you think about the process of what happens with those 85, there's gotta be, we know there's three that we're debating. Of course, right. Inside the 85. So this is the exercise. And, you know, as a leader, you know, again, this has, you know, been primarily my career. But, you know, the job of going in and not just keeping the engine running, because it has to stay running, but trying to figure out how do we move the needle when all of the other big things haven't worked. That's, you know, that's essentially process reengineering.
Yeah, that's you're right. It is likely small numbers. It is likely small cracks that once fixed give measurable approach. I like that math that you do, that like plus three students improves your yield by, or, you know, grows enrollment 20%. And I think
it's a home run
good to focus on. That's right. And I think about the things that we do at College Vine, which are really like, you know, high affinity focus. And I think about the things that you do at NLML, which are really around sort of influenceable, identifying who they are, what to do, and how does your staff spend time. There are ways for us to know these things now, right? Like I think 10 years ago, we didn't have the ability to know who was high affinity. We didn't have the ability to know who was influenceable and how we might influence them. We probably had the ability to know how our staff was spending their time, but that was more of just like observation and not getting predictive and then prescriptive about what they should be doing with their time. So it's really exciting to me that we could potentially be of better service to students if we identified who was high enough affinity, who was influenceable, and then sort of prescribe what those right behaviors might be, would make a huge difference to not only to enrollment, but the ways in which we can serve students and keep our staff more in a positive psych loop rather than like downtrodden by just the feeling of striking out.
Well, and you know what, and it does impact the students. I mean, you know, when you can systematically, and this is something we've seen, systematically replace subjectivity with, you know, sort of objectivity or data. Mm-hmm. We've seen enrollment staff morale increase. We've seen call completion increase. Mm-hmm. You know, students that are struggling with debating and can get that outreach at that time, right? That's a better experience for them. And so it really is. And to your point, we have, you know, decades and decades and decades of pent up accumulated knowledge on how enrollment management works. And, you know, I am not suggesting that that all gets thrown by the wayside at all. But what I am suggesting is that as the environment around us changes, as the technology changes, as the requirements of enrollment teams change, we've got to be open to looking at how things have been done and asking the question, you know, can any of these little pieces, you know, be done better, more efficiently, more effectively? And I refer to this as the modernization of enrollment management.
Well, I do feel like that's more possible and less scary now having had this conversation with you. So thanks for not making it feel big and scary. As I was like preparing the show, I was like, kept using words like all these like war metaphors and like bold and like, you know, like this, like all of these strong words that indicate that like, we're just going to hammer all this business process and blow it all up. And like, you're saying, okay, let's be discerning about when and where we do that, how and we do
it,
that to good.
It results. Can be done. It can be done while still running your well, teams, I mean, and your groups and delivering. You have to, right. But the point is, it's not stop everything. It is, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, allocating some time in a very, you know, prescribed manner from a leadership standpoint to try and find these areas. And if you can find them, almost certainly you can come up with a way to try and solve them. And by the way, the last thing I'll say in this, if you try something, it doesn't work, you try something else, right? You keep going. But the objective is to try and solve, you know, a bunch of little problems, as opposed to trying to, you know, eat the whole metaphorical elephant in one bite.
And that's what makes you the bad mother bleeper, Jeff Baird. Thank you for being on the show today, folks. That's all the time we have for today. Enjoy the spring ahead. Drink water. Take good care of yourself. Jeff, hopefully we can get one more day of skiing before it all wraps up. I have a feeling that will not happen, but there's always next season. Folks, thanks for joining us on The Vine Down. We'll catch you next week.